And the court said that internet access is a vehicle that provides a platform that will enhance enjoyment of the right of freedom of expression, and that states have obligation to provide protection in accordance with the law.
Welcome to The Wired Wick, demystifying tech law trends and educating about law in tomorrow's society. Hello, and welcome back to The Wired Wick. My name is Annabelle Pemberton, and in this week's episode, I'm joined by Natalia Krabiva, who's Technology Legal Counsel for Access Now and a human rights lawyer. We're going to be discussing internet blackouts. We're first going to be discussing what an internet blackout is, the current situation in Belarus and how internet blackouts were used there. And then we're going to be moving on to a case that Natalia was recently involved in the ECOWAS court in Africa. We're going to be closing with different ways that society can have an impact on internet blackouts and help fight for voices that should be heard by individuals when an internet blackout takes place. If you're enjoying the Wired Wick podcast or any of these episodes, I'd appreciate it if you review, like, or follow the show and share it with your friends who think would like it too. Enjoy the episode. So Natalia, thank you for joining me on The Wired Wig. And today we're going to be talking about internet blackouts, looking at what has recently happened in Belarus and in other countries around the world. So I understand that you've recently joined Access Now. And could you explain a bit about what is Access Now and why you decided to join as Technology Legal Counsel?
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. So Access Now, we're a digital rights organization. We founded in 2009 in response to the Iranian Twitter revolution. Our mission is to defend and extend digital rights of users at risk through policy, advocacy work, legal interventions, direct technical assistance through our digital security helpline, grant making, as well as our RightsCon conference. So I worked in different roles before joining Access Now in public interest sector, government, legal services, international organizations, academia. But it was always a challenge for me to, I felt like I had to always choose between doing a work that's very policy or research oriented and then direct services with clients. So my role at Tech Legal Counsel at Access Now, it allows me to do both essentially, because I work on the digital security helpline, which is our 24/7 digital security assistance for civil society. And I also do work that affects laws and policies on a larger scale through strategic litigation work, as well as policy and advocacy engagements. So this role, I think, fits very well for me.
So today we're going to be focusing more on internet shutdowns, but is that the main work that Access Now does, or is it broader than that as well, bringing awareness around these types of issues?
Yes, it's broader than that. I mean, internet shutdowns is a part of freedom of expression. So shutting down the internet essentially means censoring people's voices. But we also work on other issues. We work on privacy, business and human rights, internet neutrality. But obviously, shutdowns is a big chunk of this work. And we do lead the Keep It On Coalition, which monitors and documents and fights internet shutdowns around the world. So we support this work of the coalition with strategic litigation as well.
Okay, fantastic. So would you be able to explain what is an internet shutdown and what are some of the reasons for them occurring?
Sure. So we define internet shutdowns as intentional disruptions of internet or electronic communications, which make them essentially inaccessible or unusable for a specific population or within a certain location. And it's done often to exert control over the free flow of information. So shutdowns can range from blocks of specific services, platforms, or applications to wider blocks, which may include mobile internet, broadband internet, or internet as a whole. So internets may be referred as blackouts, also kill switches, disruptions, and so on. So Access Now, as I said, through the Keep It On Coalition, we monitor and document internet shutdowns and issue annual reports that on shutdowns that we see around the world. And in 2019, we documented 213 shutdowns in 33 countries, which is up from 196 shutdowns in 25 countries the previous year. And we noticed that from year to year, governments typically use the same reasons for shutdowns: public safety, national security, fake news, hate speech. But when we look at the reality on the ground, we see that shutdowns in most of these cases are associated with protests, elections, or other types of political transitions or instabilities. When leaders are afraid of either criticism or they don't want evidence of government misconduct to show up on the internet, whether that's election fraud or police violence or misconduct. So in reality, most of these cases, most of shutdowns are implemented to silence dissent and leave human rights violations in the dark and not to protect anyone's safety or security.
Okay, and then what are the overall risks of internet shutdowns for society as a whole?
So research shows us that internet shutdowns and violence, they go hand in hand. So when the government disrupts free flow of information, and it exacerbates any existing tensions that exist in the society and increase likelihood of protests, discontent, as well as potential violence or human rights violations. Without access to communication tools, journalists also are unable to report on what's happening on the ground. And they can report on elections again or any kind of violations that are occurring, both at the hands of state or private actors. Shutdowns also cut off access to life-saving information, emergency services, which is especially important during COVID pandemic, when we all depend on internet to get access to health services, but also to work, to school, and just to live our lives in general. And also shutdowns, technical means that are used to implement shutdowns, they destabilize the internet as a whole, and they disrupt economy and the ability of small businesses also to to exist. And so we see that the effects of shutdowns are way too severe and disproportionate. And so it makes them extremely hard to justify, even on such grounds as public safety and national security.
And why do you think there has been such an increase in internet shutdowns lately, especially this year?
It's hard to tell why shutdowns specifically are increasing. I mean, they seem to go hand in hand, as I said, with protests, elections. We monitor elections all over the world, and we try to predict whether the shutdowns are going to happen. And a lot of times when we do say, and we send the letters like we did in Belarus, warning governments not to shut down the internet, they still do it. So unfortunately, it is associated with elections, but also protests, any kind of, as I said, political instability. And I think governments and leaders, they see more and more the importance of the internet. And they see that I think maybe that if they shut down the internet, then the evidence of their crackdown on protests is not going to become public, but they are mistaken because it makes people even more willing to still document what's happening. And later on, it still ends up on the internet and the public knows about it. And I think the fact that the government shut down the internet is another evidence that they are committing violations and they are trying to hide them. So it's not very successful in the end.
Yes, no, absolutely. So I know you mentioned the situation in Belarus. So what do we know about
the situation concerning the internet shutdown in Belarus so far and how it was facilitated?
Sure. So we do know, and it's very well documented, both by activists on the ground and the technical experts and journalists, that on August 9, as the news started to come out that the election results might be fraudulent, authorities started to deliberately shut down the internet. And this was implemented through complete shutdowns, throttling or slowing down of networks, as well as blocking specific websites, social media websites, messaging apps, to prevent people essentially from communicating, organizing, as well as reporting on what's happening on the ground. And experts early on suggested that deep packet inspection technology was likely used to implement the shutdowns. And deep packet inspection technology, or DPI, we call it, it's basically a method of monitoring and filtering internet through inspecting contents of each packet that is transmitted through an inspection point, which allows the government to monitor all communications as well as implement targeted shutdowns or blockings. Mm-hmm. Of the internet. And so, in fact, we saw that Bloomberg later reported they did investigation that revealed that a company with US and Canadian origins called Sandvine, mm-hmm. they sold this type of technology to the Belarus government. The equipment is called Policy Traffic Switch.
Okay.
And it allows to government to filter about 40% of all the traffic going in and out of the country. And it allowed them to block the services that were reported to be blocked, international news websites, social media websites, and so on. And so, according to the Bloomberg journalist, this technology was installed in two sites in Minsk. And basically all the traffic passing in and out of the country went through this network traffic exchange center. And a large portion of it was filtered through the Sandvine traffic switches. So the government, and also the government apparently gave orders to telco companies to slow down mobile internet traffic, mm-hmm. Which happened just recently on Sunday. And so we at Access Now, we've been calling on U.S. authorities to investigate this company Sandvine for their involvement in the shutdowns. Yes. And we're also exerting pressure on the telco companies to also explain what happened and make sure that they're fulfilling their obligations to protect human rights.
Great, fantastic. And it's really interesting to hear that the telcos have been involved as well. And fantastic that you're already responding at such a fast pace as well. So overall, is the shutdown legal? Can governments do this, and do they have basis to actually shut down the internet, or is this something that is completely illegal in its nature?
Well, in the Belarus case, we don't have a court decision yet ruling that on the legality of the shutdown, but all the facts and evidence on the ground tell us that these shutdowns were deliberate attempts by Lukashenko government to silence protests, prevent them from organizing, and conceal the violence that's happening on the ground. So this violates Belarusian people's right to freedom of expression and access to information and right to peaceful assembly, which are actually ensured by the Belarusian constitution. But there are also other international rights that are affected. For example, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, ICCPR, mm-hmm. Article 19, and the comment to the article by the Human Rights Committee, comment 34, they state that no restrictions on the freedom of speech should be imposed, including internet restrictions. And they shouldn't be imposed unless they are based in law they're necessary and proportionate to the goal that the restrictions are meant to achieve. And here we see that shutdowns were not based in law, as Belarusian law on telecommunications allows access to telecommunications be limited only during martial law or in emergency situations, which mm-hmm. wasn't the case. And the actions were also not necessary or proportionate, because as we don't even get any official explanation as to why cutting access to the internet was necessary. Yes. And what was the goal that the government was trying to achieve with it? So it's quite evident that these shutdowns were illegal, as it happened in many other cases that we've seen and the court decisions that came out on those shutdowns.
You mentioned your response at Access Now, but what has been the other responses from the international community against this shutdown in particular?
We did see international organizations, as well as Human Rights, High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, and US and European officials that came out strongly condemning both the physical violence and detentions and torture of protesters, but also the shutdowns that were associated with it. And we also joined a letter with other organizations calling on UN special rapporteurs to investigate the situation, specifically the shutdowns. And the Human Rights Council recently met to discuss the situation in Belarus, and we're hoping to see some actions from them as well. And and the revelations about U.S. companies' involvement also prompted an outcry, and we, had this call to U.S. authorities to investigate potential export controls and sanctions violations that these shutdown technologies might have violated. And so we hope to see more pressure applied on Belarus government and also on the companies to stop these violations in the future.
Yes, and which direction do you think that change should occur from? Should it be from a governmental level or from businesses directly?
Well, since governments are the ones that shut down the internet, we want to see them stop doing that, just plain and simple. But companies and businesses, they have a role to play, of course. They have an obligation to respect human rights and minimize the harmful effects that mm-hmm. government orders may have on people, as well as to preserve evidence. And if they don't do that, we know that they can be sued. So, for example, in Sudan, we saw a case where the government shut down the internet, and a lawyer, Mr. Hassan, he successfully sued multiple telco companies that implemented the shutdowns ordered by the government. Wow. And he won. So this is a good example, and we definitely see a potential for more of this happening in the future.
Mm-hmm. So there's definitely hope there that businesses will take more responsibility, and if they don't, that there's legal remedies against them.
Exactly.
To enforce change, definitely. I know you've recently been involved in the success of a case held in the Economic Community of West African States Community Court for the right of freedom of expression in Togo and other Western African states. So could you explain more about the outcome of this judgment and the case as well?
Sure. So in June of this year, the ECOWAS court issued this important decision on shutdowns. This was a lawsuit by seven nonprofit organizations led by Amnesty International Togo against the Togolese government that shut down internet during protests in 2017. And the court ruling outlined several important points, I think. One is that very important that the court established that access to the internet is included within the right of freedom of expression. And the court said that internet access is a vehicle that provides a platform that will enhance enjoyment of the right of freedom of expression, and that states have obligation to provide protection in accordance with the law. And any interference basically has to be also provided for by the law, and there have to be specific grounds for such interference. The court also ruled that shutting access to internet by the government violated Article 9 of the African Charter on Human and People's Rights. And the court agreed that at the time of the interference with this right, there was no law or emergency situation in place that would justify the shutdown. And this decision is generally consistent with existing international law, such as I mentioned, Article 19 of the ICCPR and General Comment 34. However, the court didn't specifically address the other two prongs of the law. So it talked about the basis in law, but it didn't address, unfortunately, the necessity and proportionality requirements.
Okay.
And the court also stayed within the parameters of the freedom of expression, and it didn't address other rights that were might have been violated by the shutdowns. But we do think that this decision represents a significant precedent that confirms the internet as enabler of human rights that deserves protection under the law. We also like the decision coming out and saying that the commonly used excuses, you know, by governments, national security, they say, oh, everything is there's civil war happening and violence and we need to shut down the internet. The court said, no, this is insufficient to justify internet shutdown. So this was very important that court said that.
Yes, absolutely. And how was Access Now able to intervene in this case?
So we made a submission, it's called Friends of the Court brief or amicus brief, advising the court on international legal standards and norms applicable to internet shutdowns in order to assist the court in reaching a decision. This is now a common practice around the world, but also at the ECOWAS court. And we shared our experience and expertise on documenting internet shutdowns through the Keep It On Coalition. We explained what shutdowns are, how they affect people, and also explained the relevant international norms that apply to shutdowns.
Fantastic. And did you run into any other legal issues when you were actually in court as well, trying to litigate? Because I understand you're not necessarily party to the claim, so it could be from an administrative law perspective, a bit tricky in that way.
We do sometimes run into issues, both us and plaintiffs. So for plaintiffs, mm-hmm. from what I understand, because we work on a number of cases, you know, closely sometimes with plaintiffs, and they do run into issues of standing, for example, who can challenge the shutdowns. There's also issue with evidence. It's important to prove that the government, in fact, ordered the shutdowns, that it wasn't just technical problem or accident.
Yes.
In Cameroon, for example, we saw that Judge Emmanuel managed to make a telco company reveal that the government, in fact, ordered the shutdown through a legal action. So this was a good result. But sometimes it's hard because governments just don't admit that they shut down the internet. And so we have to look at the evidence that companies have or another ways of proving it. But we did have, as amici, we had a procedural issue at the ECOWAS court where the defendant basically challenged our submission by making several arguments that basically showed that they misunderstood the rule of amici and also the rules of the court. So they made various arguments as to why we... At the same time, we are experts, but at the same time, we can't also advise the court because we're too much of experts. It was very ridiculous arguments, but the court luckily ruled in our favor. And we think it's important to get this opportunity to share our expertise with the courts to ensure that the courts fully understand the significance of shutdowns on human rights and also the applicable international human rights standards that should be applied, we think, to the fullest extent.
Yes, absolutely. And I think this has been really running through our conversation, but just to really home it in, after these actions, would you say legally that access to the internet is a human right?
Well, from these actions, as well as the existing international human rights instruments, we know that internet is a part of and an enabler of other human rights, especially the right to freedom of expression, but also the right to assembly and the right to education, work, health, and so on. We do have, though, Indian courts in Kerala and also the Supreme Court decision on Jammu and Kashmir pronouncing internet as a fundamental right in itself, which is an exciting development. Mm-hmm. And we do hope that more courts follow the suit.
Yes.
But at the very least, today, we can say that internet is essential for enjoyment of other human rights. And the law is very clear on that.
So, say, for example, the precedent that has been set in these other courts as well, that shutting down the internet is seen as a breach of freedom of expression. Are there any other types of law that actually would make internet blackouts unlawful?
Yeah, so Access Now led Amicus Brief and ECOWAS case, as well as our other interventions in Indonesia and Cameroon. We invited the courts to consider other fundamental rights that are affected by shutdowns, such as right to peaceful assembly and protest, but also other rights such as right to health, education, scientific progress, cultural life, which are covered by the Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights. So we do see that, as I said, especially during COVID, shutdowns affect economies, they affect ability of people to do their work, provide services, get services, learn and develop themselves intellectually, culturally, scientifically. So we do encourage courts to also recognize the importance of internet for enabling both political as well as socioeconomic rights.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. And I know we've been speaking about the legal side and what lawyers are doing, but what can society do to prevent and highlight internet shutdowns?
So just like prevent any other human rights, digital rights violations, we do need to develop, democratic institutions, involve civil society in decision-making, put brakes on attempts of governments to weaken internet infrastructure. We should demand controls or, if necessary, moratoriums on censorship and surveillance technologies such as, DPIs, mm-hmm. surveillance tech, especially when they're solved to repressive regimes.
Yes.
And when shutdowns do happen, we also need to hold governments and companies accountable through courts, public pressure, revocation of licenses if necessary, or other sanctions. Because we all have obligation to stand up to these attempts to silence critical voices and suppress peaceful protests online and offline.
And I think that's a great way to really end our discussion today. And it gives our listeners a lot to think about and take away. So thank you for talking to me about internet shutdowns and the work that you're doing at Access Now.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
I'm Annabelle Pemberton, and you have just listened to the Wired Wig podcast, available on Spotify, iTunes, and Apple Podcasts. As always, if you liked what you just heard, be sure to follow this account on Spotify and follow the Wired Wig on Instagram for the latest tech law news and updates.